It's another Monday night, and welcome to Where Genealogy and Spirit Connect. I am very excited to have an old friend as our guest and probably one of the leaders in the field of genealogy and genetics. Bennett Greenspan and I go back, oh gosh, I hate to admit this, but when he was in one of his previous lifetimes in the in the graphics business back in the 1980s, I think it was, huh, Bennett? But in go ahead.
Susan, I was trying to figure that out a few minutes ago, and I think we met in 1982.
I think you're right, because that was in the days of the Kingdom Productions. Oh, God, does time fly when you're having fun? Is that not true?
That's
anyway, Ben and I do go back a long way, and he's been a long-time entrepreneur and probably a serial entrepreneur, and I think I know somebody who follows in his footsteps. And anyway, in April, I think it was, of 2000, he formed Family Tree DNA, and it has become one of the largest and most sophisticated non-medical genealogy and DNA testing facilities in the world. Bennett, we could go on and on about the introductions, but I want you to talk about it because from what I can see from the bio, you've expanded quite a bit. But interestingly enough, and before we start into this, I should have had you on the show last week because last week was May 11th, and I started doing a little history check, and I got in front of me a press release that was issued on Jewish Gen on May 11th of 2000. Do you remember that?
Oh, very well.
Yes, we did. And it was, we announced the Genealogy by Genetics finally. And it was your foresight and I guess our willingness to participate because in the Jewish research, we have found that there are a lot more brick walls due to the Holocaust related situations than in most ethnic type of research. So we got involved in this, and I remember very, very well. It was not fun, was it?
Well, it was, Susan, it was a learning experience, but for the benefit of your listeners, I'm going to recite a few months before that. I called you, Susan, in February of 2000 and invited you to lunch. We went to your favorite Indian restaurant in Houston, Texas.
We did.
I brought up this idea. I said, I think that we can marry genealogy and genetics. And what do you think of that idea, Susan? And you just got it. Immediately, you understood that since the Y chromosome is passed down from father to son and from son to grandson, that we could use this when we hit a brick wall in our genealogical research. And so then we started plotting how we were going to introduce this on Jewish Gen, and the press release finally went out that fateful Friday late afternoon on May 11th, and that effectively ruined May 12th and May 13th.
Yes, it did. Yeah, little did we know that the first reaction was going to be the type of reaction that we got. But, you know, if you look at it today, it's in hindsight because what you've done has just grown leaps and bounds. And I think those people who were questioning our thought process there have pretty much jumped on the bandwagon, wouldn't you say?
I'm happy to say that I think most of the initial naysayers eventually became satisfied customers, and ultimately that's what you're supposed to do with naysayers.
Absolutely. So let's talk a little bit about what you do and how you do it, and hopefully do it in layman's terms. I'm hoping that some people will call in and have some questions for you, and I'm going to give out a number real quick, and that is 888-815-9756. In addition to that, I'm going to try something new, and when you get to the website for the radio station, Station 1, and you click on BBS Fat Chat, if you do have a question and would rather pose it that way, we'll give it a whirl and see how it goes. But in any event, when you first started and conceptually, you formed a relationship with Dr. Michael Hammer. Is that correct?
Well, actually, what happened was in 1999, I was working on the genealogy of my mother's mother's father's lineage. In other words, my great-grandfather's lineage on my mom's side. And I had completed the genealogy of all the relatives in the United States. And then I went to a website called Jewish Gen, and I entered that surname, and lo and behold, I found a young lady named Maria de Los Angeles Nitz, Maria of the Angels Nitz, living in Buenos Aires, who claimed to descend from a Nitz male who lived and was born in the same village in the Ukraine that my great-grandfather's family had come from. And so I said, I'm sure they're related, at least I'd like to believe they're related, but we were unable, even though we spent months trying, we were unable to find that sacrosanct piece of paper that we genealogists simply demand. And I was thinking about my problem one day, and I realized that there had been a couple of studies done in 1997 and 1998, one on the Kohanim, Jews who in theory descend from Aaron, the brother of Moses, and then another study that electrified America that was on the Jefferson family, where some news articles claimed that Thomas Jefferson had in fact gotten his wife's half-sister, Sally Hemings, pregnant. And both of those studies use the all-important Y chromosome, which is passed down from father to son, the same way we pass down surnames. And so I called Dr. Hammer, begged him to do a DNA test. He said no, told me that they only did that for anthropological studies. And I said, that's fine, Dr. Hammer. I just want to – just tell me where I can go. All I want to do is write a check, and I'll leave you alone. And he said, well, Bennett, I don't know of anybody that's doing this kind of testing commercially anywhere in the world. But, you know, somebody should start a company like this, because I get phone calls from crazy genealogists like you all the time. And Sue said, that's a direct quote.
I think we are.
We certainly are. He wasn't wrong. It's just hearing it. So at that point, I got off the phone and I found my wife and I said, I think I found a new business to go into. And sure enough, we did a proof of concept. We tested 24 men, including one from Buenos Aires and one from Los Angeles and a couple of cousins here and a couple of theoretical cousins there. And when I received the results, I knew that every genealogist in the world would want this tool as soon as they ran into a paper trail roadblock.
And at the end of the day, they did.
And at the end of the day, we do as genealogists, and the University of Arizona got behind it, and we are now the largest DNA testing company for recreational purposes in the world. We've tested, we've performed over 500,000 tests and have tested 300,000 people through National Geographic Magazine's Genographic Project, about 150,000 tests directly through Family Tree DNA, plus our Middle Eastern office, our European office, and AfricanDNA.com, which we also test for. Between all of those, we've tested over 500,000 people.
Wow. That's a long way. And you test not only for people who are doing Jewish research, but for other ethnic backgrounds too. You have any stories that you'd like to share about one of those?
Well, certainly. I would say that about 3% of our customers are Jewish. It pretty much mimics the Jewish population in the United States. I've become, along the road, I've become intimately familiar with Irish history and Scottish history, English history, and a lot of German history, because most of our customers actually come from those places, either Western Europe, England, Ireland, Scotland, and Wales, or from Germany. France is behind, because in France it's not easy to get a DNA test done. The courts essentially say or recommend that people in France should not do DNA tests if not ordered by a magistrate, and of course that's for paternity purposes, but it kind of sloshes over. As far as stories go, Susan, it's hard to know where to start. We recently had an article that was published in the Wall Street Journal. This was a week ago Saturday, where a man used our database, having received 30 or 40 possible surnames of his biological father, tested with us, and found that he had an exact match to one man with that surname, and ultimately spent 6 months researching, found the biological family he thought that he was related to. Then he did a paternity test and found out that, sure enough, he had half-brothers. We found men who are Caucasian with the same last name as men who are African-American, because they all had the same great-great-great-great-granddaddy. We've had individuals who one individual who didn't know that he was adopted and did a DNA test to see who he would match with his surname, and he didn't match anyone with his surname, Susan, but he matched five people with a different surname, and he went to his parents and said, "Look, I match all these people." And his mother told him that his father had died when he was an infant, and that she had remarried, and that the man she had remarried had adopted him, and they just hadn't chosen to tell him that his biological mother had lost her husband and had remarried. And those kinds of stories, Susan, happen absolutely all the time.
Now, you and I got involved, too, because my mother was adopted. And I keep finding people who, you know, have the same, you know, mtDNA that she does, and it matched perfectly. Unfortunately, we can't make any connection. Nobody wants to unlock the skeleton in their closet, I'm afraid. But in any event, it's very, very interesting. I had my brother tested, and you want to talk about the mtDNA part two?
Sure. Happy to talk about both of those. Let's see.
Okay.
Let me pull up your brother. So what I can tell you about your female inherited mtDNA, and we know that your mom was adopted, her deeper ancestry is Semitic. She comes from a branch of the tree of Homo sapien known as J1. J1 is a Semitic group, and it had two migration paths into Europe. The first migration path was with the New Stone Age farmers. Those are guys called Neolithic farmers, and I'll try not to use any more of those polysyllabics on the audience tonight. But what that means is these people in northern Iraq and in Kurdistan domesticated animals and grains about 9,000 years ago, and they ran out of land, and they started moving west through Turkey into Europe, and they started moving east towards India. But most of them stayed. The second migration of this Semitic group out of the Middle East was when the Roman army deported the Judeans. They deported somewhere between 10 and 25,000 Judeans after the destruction of the Second Temple in 75. 73, in the common era. And your mother's 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 line probably was deported along with those Judeans. Looking in our database, you have matches in our database, probably 40 matches, Susan. A couple from Austria, several from Germany, several from Lithuania and Poland and Russia and the Ukraine, all the typical places that Eastern European Jews are from. Now, if we could just find someone who hailed from, I believe it was Chicago, with that same mtDNA and a secret, we might be a little closer to unlocking your secret. But what it certainly appears is that your mother was given up for adoption, went to a Jewish adoption agent, was adopted out, and the reason for that is that biologically her mother was of Jewish origin. I can't tell you anything about her father because women don't receive a Y chromosome. Women receive a pair of X chromosomes, one from the mother and one from the father, and it's not really very easy to track historically X chromosomes, because we don't know who a man, we don't know which of a man's X chromosomes he got. In other words, a woman has two X chromosomes. She could pass the one she got from mom or dad to her son, and so it zigzags. It's not a clean line. So we're probably about as far as we can go, unless you hit the lottery and decide you want to start doing massive DNA testing in Chicago.
There you go.
Susan, I want you to know I'm pulling for you.
Well, thank you. Well, you know, when we did my brother's test, and I know the technology has changed. We did what you called it. 12-marker test, I believe.
That's correct.
And we did, you're doing what kind of tests?
Well, first of all, on the Y chromosome, we look at locations or what are also called markers. So we started with a 12-marker test, and ultimately we upgraded our testing system, Susan, to 25 and 37 and ultimately up to 67 markers. And we offer more markers than any other testing company in the world. And what more markers will do is more markers will give you a tighter prediction of when two men likely shared a common male ancestor. Now, looking at your brother's sample, he comes from a branch of the tree of mankind called G. G is typically found in Soviet Georgia and Armenia, Ossetia, in other words, the area in what would be referred to as the Transcaucasus, north of Turkey and north of Iraq, would be their historical area. All of your brother's matches are shown in our database as Eastern European Jews. So if that comes as a surprise to you, then surprise. If it doesn't come as a surprise, then it should be a confirmation of what you thought.
And we have actually confirmed some of the family name matches with my brother. So
that's a great,
good clean one. That is a very good clean one. So if someone wanted to do some testing, how would they determine who to test and what would be the best way to test? I guess every situation is different. And is there some sort of information packet on your website, or how would anybody know where to start?
Well, first of all, we have a database, an electronic help desk database, where you can get answers to a lot of your questions. Also, the general email box at our company, which is info@familytreedna.com, is designed specifically to make sure that someone spends their money but doesn't waste their money. What we're in the business of is helping people confirm or deny rumors. So let me give you a few examples. Let's say let's say you have a story in your family that your mother's 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 mother was Native American. And you even believe that it was her mom who was the Native American in the family. So it's a direct female line, female to female to female to female. If that person were to do our mtDNA test, you would be able to confirm in a binary fashion, yes or no, whether that theory, my mother's mother's mother, was Native American or not. You would be able to see that, and it would be clear, and it would be unambiguous. Another example, let's say you're Irish and your name is O'Neill, and you think for this reason that you must be descended from Niall of the Nine Hostages, who was a 6th century Irish king. You can do a DNA test. One of our lower level 25 or 37 marker tests would be absolutely fine, and you'll then very easily be able to see if you match the study that was conducted by Trinity College Dublin in 2006, where they determined that 9% of all the men in Northwestern Ireland had the same DNA signature, that in fact 6% of all people in Ireland had that same DNA signature, and that there were also people with the same DNA signature who live in Scotland, and history shows us that descendants of Niall moved to form kingdoms in Scotland in the 10th century. So if that's your theory, it's easy to prove. In the first case, a man or a woman could use the mtDNA test. In the second example, you would have to get a man whose name was O'Neill, not Jensen and not McGillicuddy, but O'Neill, because your theory was that I'm an O'Neill and I'm probably related to Niall, King Niall. And so, so you have to follow the rules of biology to make this science work. For example, in 1999, when I was trying to prove whether my cousins in California were related to this little angel in Argentina, I couldn't be the test candidate. I had to get a cousin with the same last name in America and a male cousin or theoretical cousin in Argentina to test because, again, the male Y chromosome is passed down the same way that that the surname is passed down in most Western societies. So if you have a theory and you want to confirm your theory, that's what genetic genealogy is all about. It's certainly not a replacement for the hobby that we know and love. But when you hit a brick wall, or if you have a name which is so common, like Walker, that you're afraid that it's too much of a daunting task to obtain the genealogies on every Walker in America, you can use a shortcut, which would be to do a DNA test, compare your DNA against our very, very large Y chromosome database and see who you match.
So let's talk a little bit about the National Geographic project. What exactly is that, and how do people get involved with that?
Okay. The National Geographic Project is an anthropological project. It's not a genealogical project, but it uses DNA, and it uses the same 12 markers that we originally tested for your brother. So there's transportability of the DNA. Someone could order a DNA test from the Genographic Project at National Geographic Society. They could get their test kit. You get a wonderful video included called The Journey of Man. You get a good anthropological feel for how our species migrated out of Africa 50 or 60,000 years ago. You get some interactive maps so that you can see what our world was like 50 and 40 and 30 and 20 and 10,000 years ago. And then down towards the bottom of your personal page, when you get your results, you'll see a family tree DNA logo. You can click on the logo and you can move your results so that not only do you have a personal page at National Geographic, but you also then have a personal page at Family Tree DNA. And then you can use your results genealogically as well.
Wow. So there are some benefits to participating in that other in the National Geographic project, obviously. And,
sure.
And it appears that that's being funded by outside, by IBM and with the Wake Family Foundation, or?
Actually, the DNA testing that that the call-in listeners would be buying is not funded by those those organizations. However, the National Geographic project or the Genographic project has a very, very heavy science and discovery component. Their goal is to reach out to indigenous communities around the world, those people that didn't and those people that did leave Africa, who had in the past or have their own unique language.
Ben, I think we've lost you. Seth, if you're there, why don't we take a break and let's see if we can reconnect with Bennett via another method.
Hey, sorry about that.
Yep.
So where were we?
Okay. I don't know. I just heard you go blank.
Well, I'm back now. Sorry about that.
Yep.
Must have been zapped by a microwave.
Yes. Well, were on a satellite.
I am on a satellite. Yes, ma'am. Yeah. So I was talking about the Genographic Project,
right,
and the indigenous populations. It's an interesting fact that that there were perhaps 15,000 unique languages in the world when Columbus discovered America. Now, with commercialization and urbanization, there are only 5,000 languages left in the world, and we're losing those languages at the rate of approximately 100 a year because of globalization and because people are moving out of their indigenous areas in Central Asia, let's say, and they're moving to larger cities. And so National Geographic is attempting to capture those DNA signatures before they're gone, before we can't track back and say, this is a DNA signature of these people, and this is a DNA signature of those people. So it's a very, very worthwhile and ambitious project. And people who test with National Geographic can move their results into the genealogical database at Family Tree, and people who test at Family Tree can move their results for a very, very small donation to the Genographic Legacy Project Fund. They can move their results into the National Geographic database as well.
That's really cool. Now, in addition to doing your individual testing, I remember way back when there was a way to start some surname projects or town projects, and from what I can see on your website, which, by the way, is www.familytreedna.com, there are quite a number of projects going on. You want to discuss those, too?
Surely. Susan, when we started the company, we felt that the most important value for genetic genealogy would be to allow individuals with the same surname to be able to test and organize themselves in groups and determine whether two men of the same last name were related or not. And so we allowed individuals to set up what we call surname projects. We thought we were doing a wonderful job and that no one would ever ask for anything else. However, after we had set up surname projects, then people wanted to set up geographical projects. Someone wanted to set up an Irish project, or someone wanted to set up a Scottish Highlands project, and it wasn't for the Lowlanders, it was only for the Scottish Highlanders. And then someone wanted to set up a project for for Appalachia, and someone wanted to set up a project for the Melungeons in eastern Tennessee, western West Virginia, and it just went and went and went, and now we have something like 8,000 different projects. We used to have a prohibition which said that you can only be members of half a dozen projects, and we were constantly being besieged and begged by our customers to let me be in a seventh project. And so we looked at what it would take bandwidth-wise and server-wise. We bought a couple of extra machines, and we've dropped the prohibition. So now someone can be in, I guess, 20 projects if they can find 20 projects which are really pertinent to them.
And so involving themselves in projects, what exactly does that mean?
Well, first of all, if for example, I'm a Greenspan. So I have a Greenspan project, and what it allows is for all the Greenspans to be able to see each other's results and to compare, you know, their results with each other. In the normal family tree DNA system, I get to be matched against people who have the same DNA as I do. So I might match another Greenspan, I might match a King, I might match a Gold, or whoever. And I would be able to see those individuals. I'd be able to email those individuals and carry on a correspondence with them. In a surname project, we allow the surname project administrator to set up a website. We allow him to have a map. On the map, an individual can put his oldest known ancestors' place of origin in Europe. We've integrated with Google Maps for that purpose. And so the individual who joins my surname project can see that he's not related to me, but he can see how closely he is geographically to other Greenspans who he might be related to, because we found so far 17 different unrelated Greenspan groups, which tells me that the name Greenspan was assigned in different parts of Europe by different people, probably for different reasons. It's you know, it may be the Eastern European equivalent of Taylor or Miller, for all I know.
And I guess you do have some Smith and Miller and Walkers projects going on too. And
we do.
Be huge.
Well, they are. I mean, I think in the Williams project, we have over 700 people. And in the Smith project, we have a couple different Smith projects, and we have hundreds of people. McDonald project, which is really not just a surname, but it includes the names of the SEP. In other words, it includes all the clan names. It's right now bumping up and right at 1,000 people in that project. 1,000 tested people in that project is what I meant to say.
That's amazing. Now, I was also looking on your website, and I knew about it. I didn't participate. But you have an annual conference, do you not, for your project leaders?
Actually, what we do is we invite our surname project administrators to Houston. There's a nominal charge for meals in the hotel and to help us underwrite a little bit of the cost of bringing in speakers. This most recent year, we brought in a speaker to talk about mtDNA, brought in an ethicist, a biologist, brought in a couple of our successful surname project administrators to talk about the do's and don'ts of setting up a successful project. We brought in several people from the University of Arizona to talk about, how DNA and genetic genealogy has evolved over the last 9 years, because, you know, essentially biologists, or at least molecular biologists, are genealogists. They just tend to be genealogists looking at mosquitoes or fruit flies or, you know, or lizards. And occasionally they look at Homo sapiens like us. And you know, you're laughing now, but I actually had a hole in the card, shall we say, and I asked one of the biologists, what do you want to talk about? And he said, well, you know, I'm trained as a specialist in the mitochondria, which is the female DNA of desert lizards. Don't you think that would be a fascinating subject? and I had to break it. Yeah, and I had to break it to him that I thought that he might have either a group of sleepers or a very poorly attended session. So we try to keep it strictly on tools that will help genealogists be better group administrators and give them the edge up when they try to explain to other people how related two individuals with the same last name and the same surname project actually are. And what we're finding is that there is so much push from ground level upward that our customers are pushing science and are really have given the scientific community a real run for their money. In other words, the scientists used to bring the information to the general public. Now that we have our own lab and that we can test individuals whenever a new marker is found, if someone wants that new marker tested, generally we'll calibrate it. That marker is not always being tested by academia, and sometimes the work of armchair anthropologists is teaching the conventional anthropologist a little bit about the history of our species, and we saw that very clearly demonstrated at our last conference. It was good because no one was embarrassed by it, but everyone recognized that this is a very educated public who loves genetic genealogy and loves what they get to do as armchair anthropologists.
So, going back just quickly to the mtDNA, that has to always be tested, even though it's the female line, through a male, correct?
No, that is not correct.
No, it's not.
Females and males receive their mitochondria from their mothers. So your female DNA is identical to your brothers.
Okay?
It's identical. So even though female inherited mitochondria is passed down maternally, it's passed down from the mother to all of her children, and it's the girl's job to pass that female DNA on to the next generation. So, for example, your brother, I believe he has at least one child.
One child.
Okay. And that, yeah, I'm sorry?
I didn't do my job then.
Well, I'm not going there.
No.
but your brother did not pass on your mom's female DNA to his child. Your brother's wife passed her female DNA on to their child, and if the child is a girl, your brother's Y chromosome did not get passed on. If your brother's child is a boy, then that boy would have your dad's Y chromosome and your brother's Y chromosome, which would be the same, and, as I said, the child would have the mother's female inherited DNA. So when I say we're trying to confirm a rumor that great-great-great-great-grandma was a Native American, and I say that we need a direct female line generation to generation to generation coming down, but in the last generation, you can have either a male or a female that you can test. That is correct. Okay?
Well, I do have a question here, and I want to give out the phone number again just in case. It's 888-815-9756. But I did get a question that came in via email, electronic, and it's asking the following. If you do a DNA test, which family branch do you get info from? For example, say my brother donates his DNA. Can I get info on my mother's grandfather's side?
Okay. The answer to that question is no. The best way to figure out, and it's a very good question because it gets to the crux of the confusion that we have in genetic genealogy. We are slaves to biology, which means that when I test, I can look at my mother's 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 line. I can, as a male, I can test and I can look at my father's 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 line. It seemed to me that the person who asked the question said, if I test, can I look at my mother's mother's father's line? And the answer to that question is no. However, if your mother's mother's father was a Johnson, and you look in your genealogy and you can find some male cousins named Johnson, you just have to convince one of those male Johnson cousins to do a Y-DNA test, and then we'll be able to look at that male lineage that you're talking about.
It gets very complicated, does it not?
Well, it does, but we have a chart that's at www.familytreedna.com/tc.html. TC standing for technical chart. And if you read the information on that technical chart, it should be actually very easy as to who in your family you're going to need to test to make sure that you test the right person so that you've got the best possibility of getting the answer that you're looking for.
So how does one decide, too, how many markers they should test for?
Well, I'm a believer in eating the elephant in pieces, so to speak.
You haven't changed. All these years,
no, not at all. That's right. There's a modern day parallel for everything. What I'm saying is that if the person who just wrote in says, okay, great, I've gone to my genealogy and I found my mother's mother's father had a brother who had a son and I know where that guy is, I'm going to test him to see if he matches anybody. That person can start at our 12 marker test. Probably better if they consider starting at our 25 or 37 marker test, because my sense is that if they're Western European, Western Europe was settled recently within the last 10 or 15,000 years and by a rather homogeneous group of people. And for that reason, the DNA in Western Europe is very, very similar, Susan. Everybody kind of looks alike. And so we need more markers to be able to clearly differentiate between, between people. Eastern Europe, it's not that way. There were a lot more conquerors who came into Eastern Europe. There was a lot more rape, pillage, plunder, and rape that took place in Eastern Europe. And consequently, in Eastern Europe, the DNA is quite mixed. In Western Europe, the DNA is not very mixed at all. And so if people hail from Western Europe, I would say probably a 25 or 37 marker test would be the best place to start. If you're from Eastern Europe and you have a very unusual surname, and you have a little oral tradition that you come from a particular people, and there aren't a lot of those people in the world, it was a small clan or band hundreds of years ago, you might do just fine with our 12 marker test, but you should always be mentally prepared that that the need might arise for you to upgrade. But that's okay, because we preserve the DNA. We attempt to preserve the DNA for every sample for 25 years. This is biology, which means that doesn't always work, but it's our best intention to do that. And I would say about three-quarters of the samples that we are now retesting when someone orders an upgrade from 8 or 9 years ago are still viable.
So if someone did, like my brother, did the 12-marker test, and we wanted to upgrade him, we would not have to take another swatch.
That's correct. We have, in almost all probability, plus we send out a B and a C swab, we probably have his B swab sitting in a test tube at the University of Arizona in a nice buffer, which is designed to arrest all bacterial growth. And so in all probability, if the A swab, if the DNA has expired, we probably have a B swab right there that we could just go and extract and run the sample. It will only take an extra week.
Interesting. Now, for people who have never done this, basically it's not a blood test. It is a cheek swab.
That's correct.
And so if someone wants to have a family member tested, what you're asking them to do is to order a kit that has how many swabs in it? Two?
Our kits contain three swabs now.
Three swabs, okay.
A swab is effectively the same thing as a Q-tip. It kind of looks like a Q-tip. What you'll do is you'll scrape the inside of your cheek. You'll scrape it pretty vigorously for 30 or 40 seconds. Because this is science, we didn't just want to go down and buy hundreds or thousands or hundreds of thousands of Q-tips. What we did is we found a very, very nice scraper that has like a plunger in the center, and it's got a cotton brush at the end, and you can scrape on the inside of your cheek, and then you can push on the back of the scraper, and it will eject this cotton tip into a test tube, which has a liquid in it that's designed to stop all bacterial growth. That's why we can actually use our kit as a preservation kit as well. And that's why we can get the kit in and not extract it for years and then come back to it years later and extract the kit, and everything works very nicely. So what we're asking people to do is to scrape gently on the inside of your cheek, mail the scraper tips in the test tube back to us. We will then keep a couple of them on file. We'll take the third one, and we will extract the DNA, and we'll run either a Y-DNA test or an mtDNA test. And there's Susan, there's one other test I'd like to mention to your audience. It's actually very interesting. We're the only people that offer this test, not because other people can't, but because the market is small and most people are only interested in, you know, in the largest possible market. But we also can test the X chromosome, which is specifically designed by the director of our lab to help two girls prove that while they may have different mothers, they have the same father.
Oh.
And it's designed for when the father has passed away. So you can't do a classic paternity test, which would be the test of choice if you've got the two girls and a willing male. But when you don't have the male around, or if the male is not willing to do that DNA test, he's not needed anymore. We can have two girls take it, what's called an XSTR test, an X short tandem repeat test. And that will give us the same type of 99.9% confidence level that a classic paternity test will give.
That's amazing. And that's pretty new.
And we've only been offering it for about 2 years. And we don't sell a lot of it because, you know, the incidence of two girls who have found each other, who are trying to prove that they are related is not very high, but, you know, maybe as more and more people know that they have the ability to prove that they have a half-sister out there, then maybe that test will become more popular.
So the DNA test, I mean, speaking of dead people,
you have a way with words.
Well,
yep.
Now I'm going to forget my question here if you do that to me. Is there a way, if you were able to have something that belonged to a dead person, that you couldn't get their DNA through the swab? Is there any way in the world that you could include any of that information into your testing for genealogy purposes?
Okay, so let me give everyone the bad news first.
Okay.
We don't test teeth, and we don't test bones. So put them back in the cupboard.
What about hair?
On the other hand, hair really doesn't work because you need the bulb of the hair. So unless you've taken your loved one and yanked some hair out of their head, you're probably not going to have what we need. On the other hand, toothbrush, hearing aid, those work quite well. Generally, that hearing aid, because it's been stuck in the inside of the ear, and the ear has either earwax or it has or there's scaling that takes place. Generally, the hearing aid has lots of cellular material on it that can be used pretty effectively for a DNA test. And so our custom lab at Family Tree DNA does that kind of testing. There is an additional charge when we're dealing with a custom product like that, but it certainly works.
It's doable. Now, I was reading in your bio too, and I guess I haven't kept up with you over the last couple of years, that you're also doing medical testing.
We formed another company called DNA Traits, and DNA Traits looks at Mendelian, which now we need another hour, which looks at Mendelian disorders. In effect, a Mendelian disorder, it's passed down and it's predictable. If I'm a carrier and you're not a carrier and we have a child, our child will not be sick from any of these recessive traits, but the child has a certain mathematical chance of being a carrier. And so if you screen for it, you can eliminate those diseases. For example, sickle cell anemia is a Mendelian disorder. Tay-Sachs and Gaucher among Jews. Cystic fibrosis, again, another Mendelian disorder. So we have the ability to wipe those out in our lifetime if we simply test prior to two people having a child. And we think that that's very important. So that's what DNA Traits is doing, and we're starting to do more and more of that, Susan.
And are you saving some of those results, too, to trace these diseases and through different type of ethnic backgrounds?
Well, certainly, you know, ethnic groups are great containers of these Mendelian disorders. For example, you know, we know of sickle cell anemia, which is typical in African-American populations. We know that there are certain diseases that are found among the Amish that are only found among the Amish because that mutation took place in the Amish genetic gene pool. And those folks, like ethnic Jews, will tend to marry within their population. And so the disease tends to spread within the population rather than the population as a whole. But all ethnic groups tend to have some of these diseases. And as we learn more about the diseases in general and population structure in particular, there will be more and more tests that companies like DNA Traits will be able to offer that will protect the next generation.
And I would suspect, too, with the amount of, I guess, intermarriage in you know, today's world, that some of these traits are kind of mutating. I guess that might be one way to put it, into the general population.
Right. They might be moving into the general population, but because they're Mendelian and recessive, generally because of intermarriage between groups, you tend to water down the effect unless you just happen to have two people from the same ethnic group who married out, and then a couple of generations later, they tended, you know, their offspring married each other. So you marry out and then come back. But that's not highly, highly likely. And so, yes, intermarriage will tend to reduce the devastation of these Mendelian diseases.
Well, in closing, I just wanted to ask you one quick question. Did you see the article about the Dallas woman who apparently had a set of twins fathered by different men?
An active lady.
Yeah.
an active lady. You know, those sorts of things make the press, Susan, because they are the one in a million.
Right.
I don't think that any of the twins that are listening to the show tonight need to run out and have an XSTR test or a Y chromosome test to prove that they're full siblings, although if they want to, I would just encourage them to go to www.familytreedna.com.
I just thought it was very interesting. I had never heard of any such thing before, and I don't know how you would chart that on the genealogy chart. I've been thinking about it.
Yeah, that would that definitely requires some off-the-book software.
It does. Bennett, I want to thank you so much for your time. It's been quite enlightening. And again, his company is Family Tree DNA. The website is www.familytreedna.com. And I'm Susan King. My website is www.susaneking.com. This is where genealogy and spirit connect. Next week we have Ellen Radke as our guest. And it's going to be a very interesting discussion on spirituality and genealogy tonight.